We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
It's time now, by the way, to talk to Brian Scalabrine of NBC Sports Boston. He's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, bringing people together around the joys of food, by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow, and by Dr. Matthew Lopresti at Leonard Hair Transplant Associates, the hair doctor of Tom E. Curran at 1-800-GET-HAIR. And Scal joins us here on the Harbor One Hotline. Scal, I wanted to start by asking you about Tom Brady. And as somebody who's made the transition from your playing days to the broadcast booth, what advice you might have for Brady, maybe someday, eventually, making that transition?
How pompous would I be to say, you know, Tom, let me sit you down for 1 second. Let me teach you how to transition.
Why is that pompous?
Well, I mean, that's Tom Brady's transition as the GOAT, maybe of all quarterbacks, or maybe of all football players, is going to be a little smoother than, you know, me, like, you know, carving my way in the media business. But I'm assuming the one thing I will say is you have to be authentic to who you are. I tell all people transitioning, you can't pretend or, you know, shred the truth a little bit as you go along. Now, obviously, you can make adjustments. You don't need to destroy a player every time they make a bad play, but you have to be authentic to who you are. And I'm pretty sure that Tom will probably be authentic to who he is.
See, I'm a little skeptical Tom will make an easy transition there. The one thing he doesn't really have to worry about, unless he gets a Patriots game, he doesn't have to worry about, you know, following the same team week to week like you have to. Like, that has to be a struggle, right? To be critical of the team that you're covering every single game, as opposed to Brady, who can kind of bounce around and parachute around here and there for different teams.
I mean, not really. I think, first of all, I've been really lucky from this standpoint. Like, so the 1 year I went to coach the Golden State Warriors, the Celtics weren't very good. But as soon as I got back, like, they played good basketball. Like, Brad, the way that they were playing, they moved it really well. They played like what I would consider my style of basketball. The year we had expectations with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward after the Eastern Conference Finals with that kind of young team, like, we were awful. And I don't think that any of our ownership group, I don't think anybody in the front office, I don't think that even the people working at the Celtics or even the fans thought that we were good. I didn't think we were good at all that year, and I kind of just called it the way I saw it. So I don't think that I had to be careful of anything like that. Now, let me tell you, if I was broadcasting games for the Charlotte Hornets, I think it'd be a little more difficult. Or if the Celtics go full on rebuild and I'm not understanding the end result, it'd be different. But, like, I've been really lucky to be a part of this team, and they've been really good when I was a part of it.
Scal, as you reflect on your transition to being a broadcaster, how many years or seasons did you feel like it took you to lose the kind of self-consciousness of worrying about maybe not even just offending a player or people not liking you, but just realizing that the broadcast comes first and the playing days are behind you and just losing that self-consciousness?
So my first year, I was doing that all the time because, like, I could clearly see that Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce have lost a lot since, you know, like, when I was there in 2010. And Kevin Garnett lost a lot since 08, right? So I could see that, but there was no way I was saying that. It was like it was my hero losing a step. Like, it happens to everybody. And then, you know, Danny did a great job of making that move, like, a year early versus waiting. But I was not going to talk about, you know, like, Garnett and Pierce not separating as much as they used to, or like any of that stuff. So those guys move on. I go to Golden State. At that point, like, I wasn't halfway in, halfway out. I was all in on TV. I knew I didn't want to coach. After coaching the Warriors for a year, I knew I didn't want to do it anymore. Like, I just knew it. Like, it wasn't the way I wanted to live my life.
They were too good.
So then, No, they weren't good at the time. I thought as a coaching staff we underachieved. I thought Steph Curry was the greatest thing I've ever seen, and we were just like muddling around the sixth or seventh seed. I thought that team was off the charts, and I didn't think that as a staff we did a really good job. But then, you know, like I knew I was the first guy to say Steph Curry's going to win MVP. I knew he was going to do it being around him. But anyways, at that point, I was all in on that. I came back to Boston. I didn't have any of the guys that I played with. Doc Rivers was gone. I didn't have any of that stuff. So it was a lot easier after that first year when Doc was here, Paul was here, the veteran guys were here. It became appreciably easier not playing with some of the guys that I was at that point criticized, even though for the most part, I think I criticized like maybe 10% of the time. I mean, for the most part, I kind of understand what the league is and guys transitioning, trying to be better and trying to be superstar players. And you remember when the Celtics were bad, everyone was talking about trading guys. I was like, the answer is Jalen and Jason. Those guys got to be top five, top 10 players. There's no answer anywhere else besides those guys developing. That's just how we're going to be good. So, and maybe people didn't like that, but that's what I saw, and that's what eventually happened with those two.
Scal, it's Arcan. The first time I met you was 20 years ago, UMass Boston for the Summer League, LeBron's rookie year. Do you remember that? Meeting me, but do you remember being there, obviously? You probably don't remember meeting me.
There's no way he remembers that.
But you remember being at UMass Boston. Yeah. Did you ever think LeBron James could get mugged like he did at the end of that game and not get the call?
Well, I wouldn't be thinking that in 2003, but, you know, like, I think the narrative of the officials don't want LeBron to get calls is so false. The official was blocked by another player. Maybe the official was out of sight. Maybe he saw the hand but didn't see LeBron's bicep, like the arm, right? So I find it so unique that, like, people really think that the officials have it out for LeBron. He's about to score 40,000 points coming up in the next season. He's passing Kareem in less than 100 points. You really think he didn't get calls like throughout his whole entire NBA career? Now, was I shocked that they missed that call? Yeah, I was shocked. I'd be shocked. Like, you know, Jericho Sims fouled Robert Williams at the end of a game, and I don't hear the
NBA that, you know that's different. You know that's different, Scal.
Why?
Because LeBron's different than Jericho Sims, just like Garnett would be different than you. You know that.
No, I get that, but let's not pretend like that calls at the end of games don't get missed. I'm just like, I get it. Like, the call was missed, but we're acting like it was the only missed call in the history of the game. I bet there were five others in the last 2 minutes of a game. We get a last 2 minute report. Like, I get it, man. By the way, are you guys shocked by the way that he responded to that?
Yes.
I was shocked.
Like his reaction on the floor, you mean? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
was hilarious.
It was a bit much, yeah.
And continues to.
Yeah, I could not believe that our generation's greatest player did that. Like this, go down the list. You make up your own top 20 of all time. Go down the list.
Yep.
Michael Jordan, no way. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Kareem, Wilt, Bill Russell. Just keep going. No, nobody is doing that. So I was just shocked that LeBron, and I get it, he got fouled. I was shocked that he acted like that.
All right.
Go get kicked out of the game. You know, like, go up to the ref and be like, blankety blank, blankety blank, and get booted. Like, I could not believe it. I could not believe it.
All right. Well, he is Brian Scalabrine. He joins us every Wednesday at 4:30. Scal, thanks so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
See you guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.